36. A new woman. And when they were spoken of by the common folk, the releasers claimed to be misjudged because of the dreadful nature of their power. And when they dealt with others, always were they firm in their claim that other epithets, notably dustbringers, often heard in the common speech, were unacceptable substitutions, in particular for their similarity to the word voidbringers. They did also exercise anger in great prejudice regarding it, though to many who speak, there was little difference between these two assemblies. From Words of Radiance, Chapter 17, page 11. Shallan awoke as a new woman. She wasn't yet completely certain who that woman was, but she knew who that woman was not. She was not the same frightened girl who had suffered the storms of a broken home. She was not the same naive woman who had tried to steal from Yasna Kolin. She was not the same woman who had been deceived by Capsule and then Tin. That did not mean she was not still frightened or naive. She was both. But she was also tired. Tired of being shoved around. Tired of being misled. Tired of being dismissed. During the trip with Tavlakov, she'd pretended she could lead and take charge. She no longer felt the need to pretend. She knelt beside one of Tin's trunks. She'd resisted letting the men break it open. She wanted a few trunks for keeping clothing. But her search of the tent hadn't found the proper key. "Pattern," she said. "Can you look inside of this? Squeeze in through the keyhole?" Pattern moved onto the side of the trunk, then shrank down to the size of her thumbnail. He moved in easily. She heard his voice from inside.
"Dark."
"Drat," she said, fishing out a sphere and holding it up to the keyhole. "Does that help?"
"I see a pattern," he said.
"A pattern? What kind of..." Click. Shallan started, then reached to lift the lid of the trunk. Pattern buzzed happily inside. "You unlocked it."
"A pattern," he said happily.
"You can move things?"
"Push a little here and there," he said. "Very little strength on this side.
The trunk was filled with clothing and had a pouch of spheres in a black cloth bag. Both would be very useful. Shallan searched through and found a dress with fine embroidery and a modern cut. Tin needed it, of course, for times when she pretended to be of higher status. Shallan put it on, found it loose through the bust but otherwise acceptable, then did her face and hair at the mirror using the dead woman's makeup and brushes. When she left the tent that morning, she felt, for the first time in what seemed ages, like a true light-eyed woman. That was well, for today she would finally reach the shattered plains, and hopefully destiny. She strode out into the morning light. Her men worked alongside the caravan's parshmen to break down camp. With Tin's guards dead, the only armed force in the camp belonged to Shallan. Vatha fell into step beside her.
"We burned the bodies last night as you instructed, Brightness. And another guard patrol stopped by this morning while you were getting ready. They obviously wanted us to know that they intend to keep the peace. If someone camps in this spot and finds the bones of Tin and her soldiers in the ashes, it could lead to questions. I don't know that the caravan workers will keep your secret if asked."
"Thank you," Shallan said. "Have one of the men gather the bones into a sack. I'll deal with them." Had she really just said that? Vatha nodded curtly as if this were the expected answer.
"Some of the men are uncomfortable now that we're so close to the war camps."
"Do you still think I'm incapable of keeping my promises to them?" He actually smiled.
"No. I think I've been right convinced, Brightness."
"Well then?"
"I'll reassure them," he said.
"Excellent." They parted ways as Shallan sought out Makeb. When she found him, The bearded, aging caravan trademaster bowed to her with far more respect than he'd ever shown her before. He'd already heard about the shard blade. "I will need one of your men to run down to the war camps and find me a palanquin," Shallan said. "Sending one of my soldiers is currently impossible." She wouldn't risk them being recognized and imprisoned.
"Certainly," Makob said, voice stiff. "The price will be,"
she gave him a pointed stare,
"paid out of my own purse, as thanks to you for a safe arrival."
He put an odd emphasis on the word safe, as if it were of questionable merit in the sentence. "And the price for your discretion?" Shallan asked.
"My discretion can always be assured, Brightness," the man said. "And my lips are not the ones that should trouble you."
"True enough." He climbed up into his wagon.
"One of my men will run on ahead, and we will send a palanquin back for you. With that, I bid you farewell." "I hope it is not insulting for me to say, Brightness, that I hope we never meet again."
"Then our views in that regard are in agreement." He nodded to her and tapped his chul. The wagon rolled away.
"I listened to them last night," Pattern said with a buzzing, excited voice from the back of her dress. "Is non-existence really such a fascinating concept to humans?"
"They spoke of death, did they?" Shallan asked.
"They kept wondering if you would come for them. I realize that non-existence is not something to look forward to, but they talked on and on and on about it. Fascinating indeed."
"Well, keep your ears open, Pattern. I suspect this day is going to only get more interesting." She walked back toward the tent.
"But I don't have ears," he said. "Ah, yes. A metaphor? Such delicious lies. I will remember that idiom."
The Alethi war camps were so much more than Shallan had expected them to be. 10 compact cities in a row, each casting up smoke from thousands of fires. Lines of caravans streamed in and out, passing the crater rims that made up their walls. Each camp flew hundreds of banners proclaiming the presence of high-ranked Light Eyes. As the palanquin carried her down a slope, she was truly stunned at the magnitude of the population. Stormfather! She'd once considered the regional fair on her father's lands to be a huge gathering. How many mouths were there to feed down below? How much water did they require from each high storm? Her palanquin lurched. She'd left the wagon behind. The chulls belonged to Makob. She'd try to sell the wagon, if it remained, when she sent her men for it later. For now, she rode the palanquin, which was carried by Parshmen, under the watchful eyes of a light-eyed man who owned them and rented out the vehicle. He strolled along ahead. The irony of being carried on the backs of Voidbringers as she entered the war camps was not lost on her. Behind the vehicle marched Vafa and her 18 guards, then her 5 slaves, who carried her trunks. She'd dressed them in shoes and clothing from the merchants, but you couldn't cover up months of slavery with a new outfit. And the soldiers weren't much better. Their uniforms had only been washed when a high storm hit. And that was more of a douse than a wash. The occasional whiff she got of them was why she had them marching behind her palanquin. She hoped she wasn't as bad. She had Tin's perfume, but the Alethi elite preferred frequent bathing and a clean scent, part of the wisdom of the heralds. "Wash with the coming high storm, both servant and bright lord, to ward away rot-spren and purify the body." She'd done what she could with some pails of water, but did not have the luxury of stopping to prepare more properly. She needed the protection of a high prince, and quickly. Now that she had arrived, the immensity of her tasks struck her afresh. discover what Yasna had been looking for on the shattered plains, use the information there to persuade the Alethi leadership to take measures against the Parshmen, investigate the people Tin had been meeting with, and... do what? Scam them somehow? Find out what they knew about Urethiru? Deflect their attention away from her brothers? And perhaps find a way to repay them for what they'd done to Yasna? So much to do. She would need resources. Dalinar Kholin was her best hope for that. "But will he take me in?" she whispered. "Hmm?" Pattern said from the seat nearby. "I will need him as a patron. If Tin's sources know that Yasna is dead, then Dalinar probably knows as well. How will he react to my unexpected arrival? Will he take her books, pat me on the head, and send me back to Yarkaved? The Kholin house has no need of a bond to a minor Vaden like me, and I'm just rambling out loud, aren't I?" Pattern said. He sounded drowsy, though she didn't know if Spren could get tired. Her anxiety grew as her procession approached the war camps. Tin had been adamant that Shallan not ask for Dalinar's protection, as that would make her beholden to him. Shallan had killed the woman, but she still respected Tin's opinion. Was there merit to what she'd said about Dalinar? A knock came at her palanquin window.
"We're going to have the Parshmen put you down for a bit," Vatha said. "Need to ask around and see where the High Prince is."
"Fine." She waited impatiently. They must have sent the palanquin owner on the errand. Vatha was as nervous as she was at the idea of sending one of his men into the war camps alone. She eventually heard a muffled conversation outside, and Vatha returned, his boots scraping rock. She drew back the curtain, looking up at him.
"Dalinar Kholin is with the king," Vatha said. "The whole lot of the High Princes are there."
He looked disturbed as he turned toward the war camps.
"Something's on the wind, Brightness," he squinted. "Too many patrols. Lots of soldiers out. The palanquin owner won't say, but from the sound of it, something happened recently. Something deadly."
"Take me to the king, then," Shallan said. Vatha raised an eyebrow at her. The king of Alethkar was arguably the most powerful man in the world.
"You aren't going to kill him, are you?" Vatha asked softly, leaning down.
"What?"
"I figure it's one reason a woman would have, you know."
He didn't meet her eyes.
"Get close, summon the thing, have it through a man's chest before anyone knows what happened."
"I'm not going to kill your king," she said, amused.
"Wouldn't care if you did," Vatha said softly. "Almost hope you would. He's a child wearing his father's clothes, that one is. Everything's gotten worse for Alethkar since he took the throne. But my men, we'd have a hard time getting away if you did something like that. Hard time indeed."
"I will keep my promise." He nodded, and she let the drapes fall back down over the palanquin window. "Stormfather. Give a woman a shard blade, get her close. Had anyone ever tried that? They must have. Though thinking about it made her sick." The palanquin turned northward. Passing the war camps took a long time. They were enormous. Eventually she peeked out and saw a tall hill to the left with a building sculpted from and onto the stone of the top. A palace? What if she did convince Bright Lord Dalinar to take her in and trust her with Yasna's research? What would she be in Dalinar's household? A lesser scribe? To be tucked aside and ignored? That was how she'd spent most of her life. She found herself suddenly passionately determined not to let it happen again. She needed the freedom and the funding to investigate Urethiru and Yasna's murder. Shallan would accept nothing else. She could accept nothing else. So make it happen, she thought. Would that it were so easy as wishing. As the palanquin turned up the switchbacks leading to the palace, Her new satchel, from Tin's things, shook and hit her foot. She picked it up and flipped through the pages inside, finding the crinkled sketch of Bluth as she'd imagined him, a hero instead of a slaver. Pattern said from the seat beside her. This picture is a lie, Shallan said.
Yes.
And yet it isn't. This is what he became at the end. To a small degree?
Yes.
So what is the lie and what is the truth? Pattern hummed softly to himself, like a contented axe hound before the hearth. Shallan fingered the picture, smoothing it. Then she pulled out a sketch pad and a pencil and started drawing. It was a difficult task in the lurching palanquin. This would not be her finest drawing. Still, her fingers moved across the sketch with an intensity she hadn't felt in weeks. Broad lines at first, to fix the image in her head. She wasn't copying a memory this time. She was searching for something nebulous, a lie that could be real, if she could just imagine it correctly. She scratched frantically at the paper, hunkering down, and soon stopped feeling the rhythm of the porter's steps. She saw only the drawing, knew only the emotions she bled onto that page. Yasna's determination, Tin's confidence, a sense of rightness that she could not describe, but which she drew from her brother Helleran, the best person she'd ever known. It all poured from her into the pencil and onto the page, streaks and lines that became shadows and patterns that became figures and faces. A quick sketch, hurried, yet one alive. It depicted Shallan as a confident young woman standing before Dalinar Kholin, as she imagined him. She'd put him in shard plate, as he and those around him studied Shallan with penetrating consternation. She stood strong, hand raised toward them as she spoke with confidence and power. No trembling here, no fear of confrontation. This is what I would have been, Shallan thought, if I had not been raised in a household of fear. So this is what I will be today. It wasn't a lie. It was a different truth. A knock came at the palanquin's door. It had stopped moving, she'd barely noticed. With a nod to herself, she folded the sketch and slipped it into the pocket of her safehand sleeve. Then she stepped out of the vehicle and onto cold rock. She felt invigorated and realized she had sucked in a tiny amount of stormlight without meaning to. The palace was both finer and more mundane than she might have expected. Certainly this was a war camp, and so the king's seat wouldn't match the majesty of the royal dwellings of Carbranth. At the same time, it was amazing that such a structure could have been crafted here, away from the culture and resources of Alethkar proper. The towering stone fortress of sculpted rock, several stories high, perched at the pinnacle of the hill. "Vatha, Gaz," she said, "attend me. The rest of you take up position here. I will send word." They saluted her. She wasn't certain if that was appropriate or not. She strode forward and noticed with amusement that she'd chosen one of the tallest of the deserters and one of the shortest to accompany her, and so when they flanked her, it created an even slope of height. Vatha, herself, Gaz. Had she really just chosen her guards based on aesthetic appeal? The front gates of the palace complex faced west, and here Shallan found a large group of guards standing before open doors that led to a deep tunnel of a corridor into the hill itself. 16 guards at the door? She had read that King Elokar was paranoid, but this seemed excessive. "You'll need to announce me, Vatha," she said softly as they walked up.
"As?"
"Brightness Shallan Devar, ward of Yasna Kholin and causal betrothed of Adolin Kholin. Wait to say it until I indicate." The grizzled man nodded, hand on his axe. Shallan didn't share his discomfort. If anything, she was excited. She strode by the guards with head held high, acting as if she belonged. They let her pass. Shallan almost stumbled. Over 12 guards at the door and they didn't challenge her. Several raised hands as if to do so. She saw this from the corner of her eye, but they backed down into silence. Vatha snorted softly from beside her as they entered the tunnel-like corridor beyond the gates. The acoustics caught echoing whispers as the guards at the door conversed. Finally, one of them did call out after her.
"Brightness?"
She stopped, turning toward them and raising an eyebrow.
"I'm sorry, Brightness," the guard called. "But you are?"
She nodded to Vatha.
"You don't recognize Brightness Devar?" he barked. "The causal betrothed of Brightlord Adolin Colin?"
The guards hushed, and Shallan turned around to continue on her way. The conversation behind started up again almost immediately, loud enough this time that she could catch a few words.
"Never can keep track of that man's women."
They reached an intersection. Shallan looked one way, then the other. "Upward, I'd guess," she said.
"Kings do like to be at the top of everything," Vatha said. "Attitude might get you past the outer door, Brightness, but it's not going to get you in to see Colin."
"Are you really his betrothed?"
Gaz asked nervously, scratching at his eye patch. "Last I checked," Shallan said, leading the way. "Which, granted, was before my ship sank." She wasn't worried about getting in to see Colin. She'd at least get an audience. They continued upward, asking servants for directions. Those scuttled about in clusters, jumping when spoken to. Shallan recognized that kind of timidity. Was the king as terrible a master as her father had been? As they went higher, the structure seemed less like a fortress and more like a palace. There were reliefs on the walls, mosaics on the floor, carved shutters, an increasing number of windows. By the time they approached the king's conference chamber near the top, wood trim framed the stone walls, with silver and gold leaf worked into the carvings. Lamps held massive sapphires, beyond the size of ordinary denominations, radiating bright blue light. At least she wouldn't lack for stormlight, should she need it. The passage into the king's conference room was clogged with men. Soldiers in a dozen different uniforms.
"Damnation," Gaz said. "Those are Sadius's colors there."
"And Thanadol and Aladar and Ruthar," Vatha said. "He's meeting with all the high princes, as I said."
Shallan could pick out factions easily, dredging from her studies of Yasna's book the names and heraldry of all 10 high princes. Sadius's soldiers chatted with those of High Prince Ruthar and High Prince Aladar. Dalinar stood alone, and Shallan could sense hostility between them and the others in the hallway. Dalinar's guards had very few light eyes among them. That was odd. And did that one man at the door look familiar? The tall, dark-eyed man with the blue coat that went down to his knees. The man with the shoulder-length hair curling slightly. He was speaking in a low voice with another soldier, who was one of the men from the gates below.
"Looks like they beat us up here," Vatha said softly.
The man turned and looked her right in the eyes, then glanced down toward her feet.
"Oh, no."
The man, an officer by the uniform, strode directly toward her. He ignored the hostile stares of the other High Prince's soldiers as he walked right up to Shallan.
"Prince Adolin," he said flatly, "is engaged to a horn-eater?"
She'd almost forgotten the encounter 2 days outside of the war camps.
"I'm going to strangle that,"
she cut off, feeling a stab of depression. She had ended up killing Tin. "Obviously not," Shallan said, raising her chin and not using the horn-eater accent. "I was traveling alone through the wilderness. Revealing my true identity did not seem prudent." The man grunted.
"Where are my boots?"
"Is this how you address a light-eyed lady of rank?"
"It's how I address a thief," the man said. "I'd just gotten those boots."
"I'll have a dozen new pairs sent to you," Shallan said, "after I have spoken with High Prince Dalinar."
You think I'm going to let you see him? You think you get to choose? I'm captain of his guard, woman.
Blast, she thought. That was going to be inconvenient. At least she wasn't trembling from the confrontation. She really was past that. Finally. Well, tell me, Captain, she said. What is your name?
Kaladin.
Odd. That sounded like a Light Eye's name. Excellent. Now I have a name to use when I tell the High Prince about you. He's not going to like his son's betrothed being treated this way. Kaladin waved to several of his soldiers. The men in blue surrounded her and Vatha and... Where had Gaz gotten off to? She turned and found him backing down the corridor. Kaladin spotted him and started visibly.
Gaz? Kaladin demanded. What is this?
The one-eyed man stammered.
Lord, Kaladin, you're, an officer. So things have been going well for you.
You know this man? Shallan asked Kaladin.
He tried to get me killed, Kaladin said,
voice even,
on multiple occasions. He's one of the most hateful little rats I've ever known.
Great.
You're not Adolin's betrothed, Kaladin said, meeting her gaze as several of his men gleefully seized Gaz, who had backed into other guards coming up from below. Adolin's betrothed has drowned. You are an opportunist with a very bad sense of timing. I doubt that Dalinar Kolin will be pleased to find a swindler trying to capitalize on the death of his niece.
She finally started to feel nervous. Vatha glanced at her, obviously worried that this Kaladin's guesses were correct. Shallan steadied herself and reached into her safe pouch, pulling out a piece of paper she'd found in Yasna's notes. Is High Lady Navani in that room? Kaladin didn't reply. Show her this, please, Shallan said. Kaladin hesitated, then took the sheet. He looked it over, but obviously couldn't tell that he was holding it upside down. It was one of the written communications between Yasna and her mother, arranging for the causal. Communicated via span read, there would be two copies, the one that had been written on Yasna's side, and the one on Brightness Navani's side.
We'll see, Kaladin said.
We'll... Shallan found herself sputtering. If she couldn't get in to see Dalinar, then storm this man. She took his arm in her free hand as he turned to give orders to his men. Is this really all because I lied to you? She demanded more softly. He looked back at her.
It's about doing my job.
Your job is to be offensive and asinine?
No, I'm offensive and asinine on my own time, too. My job is to keep people like you away from Dalinar Kolin.
I guarantee he will want to see me.
Well, forgive me for not trusting the word of a horn-eater princess. Would you like some shells to chew on while my men tow you away to the dungeons?
All right, that's enough. The dungeons sound wonderful, she said. At least there I'd be away from you, idiot man.
Only for a short time. I'd be by to interrogate you.
What? I couldn't pick a more pleasant option? Like being executed?
You're assuming I could find a hangman willing to put up with your blathering long enough to fit the rope.
Well, if you want to kill me, you could always let your breath do the job. He reddened, and several guards nearby started snickering. They tried to stifle their reaction as Captain Kaladin looked at them.
I should envy you, he said, turning back to her. My breath needs to be up close to kill, while that face of yours can kill any man from a distance.
Any man? She asked. Why, it's not working on you. I guess that's proof that you're not much of a man.
I misspoke. I didn't mean any man, just males of your own species. But don't worry. I'll take care not to let our chulls get close.
Oh? Your parents are in the area, then? His eyes widened, and for the first time she seemed to have really gotten under his skin.
My parents have nothing to do with this.
Yes, that makes sense. I'd expect that they want nothing to do with you.
At least my ancestors had the sense not to breed with a sponge, he snapped, probably a reference to her red hair.
At least I know my parentage, she snapped back. They glared at each other. Part of Shallan felt satisfaction at being able to make him lose his temper, though from the heat she felt in her face she'd let go of hers as well. Yasna would have been disappointed. How often had she tried to get Shallan to control her tongue? True wit was controlled wit. It shouldn't be allowed to run free, any more than an arrow should be loosed in a random direction. For the first time, Shallan realized that the large hallway had grown silent. A great number of the soldiers and attendants were staring at her and the officer.
Bah!
Kaladin shook her arm free of his. She hadn't let go after getting his attention earlier.
I revise my opinion of you. You're obviously a high-born Light Eyes. Only they are capable of being this infuriating.
He stalked away from her toward the doors to the king's chamber. Nearby, Vatha relaxed visibly.
Getting into a shouting match with the head of High Prince Dalinar's guard? He whispered to her. Was that wise?
We created an incident, she said, calming herself. Now Dalinar Kholin will hear of this one way or another. That guardsman won't be able to keep my arrival secret from him. Vatha hesitated.
So it was part of the plan?
Hardly, Shallan said. I'm not nearly that clever, but it should work anyway. She looked to Gaz, who was released by Kaladin's guards so he could join the two of them, though all were still under careful watch.
Even for a deserter, Vatha said under his breath, you're a coward, Gaz.
Gaz just stared at the ground. How do you know him? Shallan asked.
He was a slave, Gaz said, at the lumber yards where I used to work. Storming man. He's dangerous, Brightness. Violent. A troublemaker. I don't know how he got to such a high position in such a short time.
Kaladin hadn't entered the conference chamber. However, the doors cracked a moment later. The meeting appeared to be over, or at least on break. Several aides rushed in to see if their high princes needed anything, and chatter started up among the guards. Captain Kaladin shot her a glance, then reluctantly entered, carrying her sheet of paper. Shallan forced herself to stand with hands clasped before her, one sleeved, the other not, to keep herself from looking nervous. Eventually, Kaladin stepped back out, a look of annoyed resignation on his face. He pointed at her, then thumbed over his shoulder, indicating she could enter. His guards let her pass, though they restrained Vatha when he tried to follow her. She waved him back, took a deep breath, then strode through the moving crowd of soldiers and aides, entering the king's conference chamber.